Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
This week's show brought to you by spaceships.
Well, at least one very important spaceship. We have a guest this week, folks, joining us from, is it Winchester?
Yes, Winchester, that's right.
Which is funny, because my favorite show is Supernatural, and their names are the Winchester brothers, so I just think that. Most people would probably think the bar from Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, that's right, probably, exactly.
That's probably what most
or the rifle.
Or the rifle. Yeah. Joining us from Winchester in the UK.
Yes, that's right.
Is Chris Parsons.
Hello, everybody.
What the fuck?
Really glad to be able to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we are here to talk about your currently kickstarted game called Soul Trader.
That's right.
And I'm going to be saying it like Soul Trader all night, because that's what I do. I just say things wrong, apparently.
You should say it like they said in the 70s.
Soul Trader.
Then we're going to have the dance line. And
I do exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Don Cornelius.
Yes, I was trying to remember his name, and I had the last name in my head. You had the first name.
That's why we do this together, because.
So yeah, folks.
$40 worth of pudding.
Oh yeah. I'm Barry. So yeah, we are talking about Soul Trader, which, Chris, why don't you give us like the elevator pitch of Soul Trader, and then we'll take it from there.
Sure. So Soul Trader is a top-down spaceship title that's kind of a mashup of Elite and Asteroids in terms of its graphics and elements of it's got things like elements of Drox operative in there as well. And but the really interesting part, which I really love talking about, is the procedural history generation. So the idea of having generations of characters that have sort of lived and died before you in each and every new game. So that's very similar to the kind of Dwarf Fortress Legends mode.
Okay, because that was the thing that Brian and I were talking earlier. Like, have you played the role playing game Pen and Paper Traveler or Mega Traveler?
I've played the computer version that was written in the 80s.
Okay, because what I understand from that, I played it once, but it was so long ago. But it did the character generation where you could actually die in character generation. At least in the book version of it, right? I did it to myself a couple of times, but anyway, as soon as I start like clicking through the character generation in your game, I was like, oh my god, it's like Traveler. So that was kind of a nice thing. I've never seen a computer game other than Traveler that did that. So
sure, I've been thinking about those kind of ideas for a while. Probably some of those influences are seeping in as well, because I've been thinking about making this game for at least 15 years.
So how does all that stuff, because I notice you pick up skills right as you go through things, but
yeah, that's
how
right,
does that
yeah.
actually influence the gameplay itself?
At the moment, there is still, because it's still an alpha, there's a disconnect between the actual skill set there and how you and what actually happens when you play. The idea is that, for example, if you are better at gunnery or better at piloting, then that will affect the responsiveness of the controls and the ability to turn the ship quickly, that kind of thing. The way that the business dealing stuff works is that if you are better at kind of business type skills, you're more likely to be able to get a good deal on a particular spaceship component or something like that. And then there's political skills in there as well.
Okay.
So there's a sense that things will go better with you with some of the other people in the world. So when you're trying to relate to people, so for example, if you're good at piloting as well, the kind of idea is that if they're also a fair pilot, then you'll be able to kind of you'll be able to build a rapport with people more easily.
Yeah, and I have to say, I really like. I mean, right now it doesn't seem like the character. It's because it's an early version. The character really has much of an effect, but I love how like you kind of have no idea where it's going to go. Like I've generated about a dozen characters so far,
sure.
And one character might be a mechanic apprentice. And I had no idea. And then the next character will be a political, like a political assistant or something.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And then another one will be a courier. And then another one will be, you know, just all these different things. It's kind of fascinating.
So yeah, there's about probably 40 different professions that a character could take at the moment. So, you know, and I'm still adding them all the time because as I, what happens is that the different professions are directly linked into the AI when you actually start the game. So, for example, I just added one last week, which is a like an air traffic controller, but for space.
Oh,
so each
nice.
City has now got a space traffic controller. I mean, that's actually a required occupation. So the AI will make sure that somebody is doing that job so that when you want to land at a city, the idea is that you will kind of radio up that guy and that guy will be the guy who proves your landing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that perfectly makes sense.
Yeah, and that comes directly from the history generation. So you'll get the guy who took that job, which isn't a very good job, which makes a difference to potentially, you know, whether or not that guy is going to be nice to you. You never really know.
Right. So, we're about to hit the character generator. We're about to choose a family. Now, explain. There are a bunch of numbers here on the right.
Sure.
You have counselor. You have courier. Now, are these like all the people who live in this particular city that do have a specific type of job? Like in the city, there are
exactly
seven.
Right.
There are seven pirates, and there are.
At the moment, that's it's really for debugging information on the right-hand side. But that is the list of all of the characters in the game who are alive at this point.
That is
at
fascinating.
At the point at which you've got to.
Okay, exit character generation and you start playing the game, the list of people that's over there is actually going to be people that you can run into.
Yes, exactly right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
you know,
at the moment, the way it works is... Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, Klifsky lives like right down the road, right? So... I mean, it's Britain.
Yes.
You could be anywhere in Britain, but it's really small, so it's right down the road.
Sure.
But anyway, he's got that democracy game that he did where he's tracking the mental state of, you know, like a whole country full of voters, right? So it seems kind of like you might be getting into the same ground in one way here. Like if you're actually going to track the careers of all these people and how they interact and that. I mean, are you going to take it to that level of depth or is it just...
Sure. Klifsky and I used to work together years ago. We used to work for the same company back when we were both in games development, AAA games development. So we do know each other, although I haven't seen him for a number of years. But I loved Democracy. I played it loads. I was a big fan of it. I think I love that kind of neural network style of kind of setting up a kind of a massive AI and basically kind of interacting with it. And that's kind of, there's a similar kind of vein here in the sense of being able to really interact with any person in the game and being able to, you know, go and meet any of these particular people and kind of find out about them and their characters and that kind of thing. So yes, I wouldn't necessarily say it's an influence, but obviously every game that you play influences the decisions that you make about the games that you make. So
now I have a question. You grew up in this particular city and I was flying around earlier. It didn't seem like planets had individual cities. Is that something that's coming where if you land,
this is something I'm building at the moment. They do have individual cities.
Right.
The way that cities are kind of done is abstract, but it's my way of ensuring that some planets are more populated than others. So basically at the moment, it creates 50 characters per city as a kind of starting point. You clicked 50 here, so that's what it's gone for. Smaller numbers just mean it's slightly quicker to generate for slower computers. If there are, say, three or four cities on Earth, for example, that have been modeled, then you're going to get 200 people starting on Earth, whereas you're only going to get 50 on a moon, a smaller moon that has, like, one city.
Right. And I got to say, the names I've run into of the families... They kind of crack me up. I'm sorry. Yeah. They're hilarious. Like right now, we've got a very British name, Victor Eldershaw hyphen Clucas.
Yeah, they're obviously entirely random. But actually, I mean, the names will follow the kind of generational pattern. So as two people get together, their names change. And potentially, if the reason that you get a double barrel there is sometimes when a couple gets together, they actually take on each other's names, if you see what I mean, just like they do in real life. So that's why, to be honest, at the moment, the double-barreledness is probably a little bit, it's probably more common than it is in real life. So you get some crazy ones. And at one point, when I was building this, you know, I forgot to kind of limit the number of double barrels. So you used to have about 8 different names chained after each other, which was ridiculous, but it was hilarious to read. But yeah.
So I like how you can choose different out of 92, you can choose which one and where they grew up. But I love this Eldershaw Clucas name, so I'm going to choose that.
Go for it.
And then you just go through, you start. Now, are you going to be able to name your character? Because right now...
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Not at the moment, but yeah, this is an alpha, so that's definitely going to be a feature.
Okay, because I do kind of like the names it's been coming up with for me, but, you know, it'd be nice to be able to... I usually name my characters after me, like for that immersion.
Sure.
But let's see. So we have a political assistant as the father and a master's student as the mother. Okay. Now, I got to ask something. I've seen this before. Like right now it says under relationships, it both says beloved child.
Yes.
But I've seen situations where only one parent says beloved child. Does that mean?
That's right.
Does that mean the other parent is like, I like you enough?
So generally speaking, I'm kind of attempting to model the real world here slightly, but obviously it's a little bit simplified. But what happens is that the mother will always bond to the child well. But depending on how well the father is getting on with the mother, at this particular point in the character generation, that sets the relationship between the father and the child at the beginning of the child's life. The idea is that if they are almost basically on the point of divorce, then the father isn't gonna enjoy the process of getting to know the child, if you see what I mean.
And they can get divorced, so you might be growing up in a single parent household.
Absolutely, yeah. People can divorce, and they can fall out, and obviously that affects everyone in the family. So it just means that they're less likely to have a good relationship with their parents. And like I said, you know, it is oversimplified, and it is very stereotypical. You know, it's not how normal life really works, but it tells a good story, if you like.
I mean, yeah, for something you're trying to model here, I think it works fine, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it works great. Yeah, like right now I was born – the Brian with a Y. Oh, God, I'm an asshole. Because I'm going to say it, folks. All Brians with Ys, assholes. Just – I mean, I don't even know why, but – so Brian Clucas. So I'm the beloved child of Victor, but not so much – Judy anymore. Judy.
Yeah, so again, that what happens with the relationships is they go up and down. Every year, the relationships are reviewed and they'll go up and down. And that's a function of your attributes, which actually aren't just shown yet for the child, because attributes are revealed over time for children. But so if you've got a poor wisdom value or a poor charisma value, that'll affect how your relationships change.
Great. And I like how you have a paragraph here summarizing the character. Like, Brian Clucas is unable to lift anything, but he's very lean and agile and prone to tiredness.
Yeah, that's right.
But so he's very smart.
I have 6 basic attributes that I just kind of expand out into a sentence because it's more fun, basically.
It is more fun. I mean, some people love the numbers, but I like this too because it's funny. Like, he can't lift anything. He's just a scrawny weakling.
But I love the people who are very intelligent but also completely unable to do anything for themselves, which I think is quite interesting.
He's very grumpy and sensible. it's really great.
Yeah.
So let's see. Oh.
So he's fallen out with his mother by the looks of things. No, somebody else. Oh, no, with one of his sisters.
Yeah, so he had a falling out with Diane. That's great that you can read that on the screen sharing thing. So I like how every now and again you have a thing where the character is struggling with something, whether it's gym or – now, what is craft? Yeah. What is that, like
arts? That will directly affect your dexterity. Yeah, like arts and crafts. So like the idea is to – it affects your dexterity, actually. So this is an opportunity to kind of influence your – characters' attributes right at the beginning of their lives. So the idea is to try and give you an opportunity to create the character you want to create.
I like it because it's more organic, kind of like the way the Elder Scrolls games do it, when you ask a bunch of questions and stuff like that.
And I like the Elder Scrolls character generation stuff, and like again, you know, there are influences from everything.
Yeah, exactly. Which is good because I've been really digging this. So let's see. Struggled with running games.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm estranged from my sister. How do you get estranged?
And the other one too.
Child.
It's because you're grumpy sometimes. It's because you're grumpy.
Oh yeah, it's true. But yeah, I'm still the beloved child. I'm still the beloved child of Victor.
Yeah, well that's good, and that'll probably stay like that now. Then, although you never know.
Let's see. Oh, Victor's now a freelance trader. I like how even your family members change professions. Like Victor's now a freelance trader.
So the history generation hasn't stopped at this point. The way that it works is it will, depending on how old you want your character to be, it pauses history generation. Say you wanted a character to be 25, actually 25 years before present day, it will pause history generation and then build your character. And the rest, all the other characters in the game are still being generated at this point, so they all affect each other.
Ah.
If that makes sense. So even the decisions and the choices and the people you meet now affects the way that the whole world is being created.
I see. And now our boy is
lost a bunch of relationships there. There is a bug where relationships actually vanish. They shouldn't actually vanish.
Oh, okay, yeah, like his siblings disappeared.
I need to fix that app.
And maybe
they
one
haven't disappeared.
And one of his parents, like you can't see them anymore on the screen, but alpha.
That's just a display bug. Yeah, it's an alpha.
But now even though he's grumpy, he's friends with two people. So
they'll still make friends. They may have trouble keeping them though. We'll see.
Well, he's great friends with Justin and friends with Jillian. One of my characters actually got married, which I had not seen often. But that was pretty cool.
The last time I generated one, we had a character got married, and then I think just before the world started, they were killed in some freak accident. It was really awful.
Oh no! That's terrible.
Which does
that's
happen.
Awesome. So
you could
become...
end up like Batman, right? Like your parents get killed and then.
Yeah, absolutely. That happens a lot. Yeah, seriously. And it allows you to create your own backstory for the game.
Dude, if both your parents die in creation, you should automatically get a special bat-shaped spaceship.
Yeah, that would be
just a little Easter egg in there.
Yeah.
So I see. I did not guess. I was wondering where this Brian fellow's career was going to go. But apparently, based on how his life has gone so far, he's destined to become a political assistant.
Yeah.
And I like how you can choose where he goes. Now, since you're in England, we're going to choose London.
Cool.
Here, he's going to become a political assistant at the University of London. So now he's going off to school. Whoa!
Oh, no!
Brian died of natural causes.
That hardly ever happens.
Oh shit! Jim and I were talking about that because in Traveler you can die during character generation.
Yeah. Achievement unlocked.
seriously.
That had not happened to either of us. So I'm kind of happy that I killed off, because again, Brian,
that hasn't happened to me for weeks. I've been creating characters all the time. So you're very special.
Well, look,
I'm not
Brian
sure whether to leave that.
Brian,
I'm not sure whether to leave that in there, but I quite like it in
some
ways.
No, you got to leave that, because people will be like, what? Because I got to tell you, have you played – I'm going to bring up Elite Dangerous for just a minute here.
Right.
I don't know if you've played it, but it's amazing.
No, I'm certainly intending to pretty soon. But the problem is when you make games is that you got to be very careful not to get sucked into amazing-looking games.
That totally makes sense.
I do need to play it because I want to check it out and see the sorts of ideas they've got in there. But what I don't want to do is just give my life to it for the next 6 months.
That's what I've been doing. But what I was saying is it kind of has an old-school sensibility where, like, it kind of puts you in this universe and just says, fuck off, do your own thing.
Right.
Wait, I need help. I need like a – I need a – and newer players, younger gamers are like, wait, I need a compass with an arrow telling me exactly where to go. I think it's kind of funny that you're going to have a character that can die, because I don't think more modern gamers are used to that.
No, sure.
So I think you should keep it. I think you should totally keep it because it's awesome. You're going to get people complaining, but whatever.
Yeah.
You're also going to get people thinking it's hilarious because he was a weakling. He was grumpy and put off with people. So,
and it's the tiredness, actually. And if you look, he was always getting tired and needed to sit down. That's he had probably some underlying health condition.
Oh, interesting.
So what that means is a low constitution. And that will directly affect the chances of you just dying of some illness. So that does happen. And now also your parents, if this generation had continued, they would be really upset by that. That would cause attribute changes for them. And, you know, especially if you lose a child, if they lose a sibling, makes a big difference to their lives. They're never the same again. Yeah, at this point, you want to close it and restart it. The like I said, because it's so rare, it kind of screws up the generation.
Okay. So, yeah. Oh, good. I didn't have to close out the game. Great new history. Very good.
That's fine.
So let's do 50 again. We'll do 25. 25 seems a good solid age.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. It gives you a chance to have a bit of a profession.
Here's another double name, Rowden Craig.
Yeah.
It's not as funny. Let's see. Oh, Bagshaw Harling. There we go. I love it. Eliza Rowden. Wow, they didn't even keep each other's names. They're not married. Scandal. Scandal. I'm born a bastard. Ooh, I like it. Oh, that should be a thing. You should have like a thing where like if he's a bastard, it's sure. a little special grumpy.
Yeah, at the moment there is. I think they probably are married, but they just haven't taken on them each other's names.
Oh, that'd be funny if two. You have,
I'm not sure. Yeah,
out of wedlock. So we'll still do.
Yeah, like I said, it's a gross simplification of the real world, but
right. But it's still funny. Exactly. So now we got Keith. Wow, they're both freelance traders, the mother and the father. So I'll just take care of the father because it's like 6 of 1, half a dozen. Oh, I had a falling out with the father who I took after. Yeah. Son of a bitch. Of yeah. Oh, God. And yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, he's not the legendary strength. Very tough with lots of endurance. But that's no common sense. But no common sense.
Yeah, so freelance traders, the way that the game chooses the professions for the characters is the characters choose their professions based on their attributes. So, you know, there are certain kind of factors which will stop you being allowed to be a certain profession.
Huh.
So, for example, if you want to join Starfleet, you have to have a certain amount of strength and dexterity and constitution, actually. Otherwise, it won't give you the opportunity to do that profession. So earlier when you looked at political assistant, that was actually the only occupation that had vacancies that you had the attributes for, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
Yeah, so the reason that, you know, you've got legendary strength is because your attributes are directly taken from your parents and, you know, they're both freelance traders and strength is one of those things that, you know, and you can see that they don't have much common sense necessarily, but also quite smart and charismatic. It's kind of a classic, a little bit of a Han Solo type there.
Yeah, very, you know. Very nice. Very
so that's
nice.
Where that's kind of where that comes from, you know.
Wow. Okay, let's keep going.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say this guy struggled with he struggled with listening to the teachers.
Yeah, that's now that's a wisdom thing. So you're now totally reckless with life and limb.
But he's personable and sociable.
Yeah, well, it's kind of an interesting character. See how he does. He'll probably become a criminal.
Oh, really? That could be an option.
Wisdom directly affects your criminality.
Oh, that I got to say that's funny. So I'm going to say he worked hardest in the gym.
You can't go beyond legendary strength, though.
Oh, boo.
That was
okay,
a bit of a
fine.
Waste, but hey, never mind.
Oh, at least you learn. So forward, skip forward. He's not really making any friends yet.
No, that's interesting.
Still a strange. Oh, he's keen on Heidi. Keen on Heidi. Beacon. Yeah. Okay.
So that means that they're probably seeing each other.
Wow. Okay. So this guy can. Oh, look at this. Now we have a variety of options. We could become a freelance trader like our parents. We can enlist in Starfleet. There was another one.
Astro
mining trading.
You need a lot of strength to become an astro miner.
Oh, since I love Star Trek, I kind of want to enlist in Starfleet.
Yeah. That's a good solid occupation. It's pretty dangerous. It's not quite
I like that.
Astro mining.
Space is supposed to be dangerous. So we're going to enlist with Starfleet. Oh, wow. He got married. Yay.
And he moved to Cape Town as well.
Happily married. Yeah.
So when you're married, you move with your character. So for example, Heidi will now have also moved to Cape Town to do her training mining engineering. And you may, and depending of her job moves, you may also move and get a different job.
Very nice.
So characters follow each other around and try and find jobs in the cities in which they live. And there's a kind of, at the moment, there's a little bit of a bug where they keep moving because each of them hate the job that they're in. So they keep, you know, moving every year to a different place. So I'm trying to help them to settle down a bit.
Well, it sounds like there are so many moving parts. yeah, this game with all the characters. It's
impossible to predict how the history is going to go.
Well, right, but not only that, but I was thinking you mentioned there are bugs. I mean, aren't there just – is bug squashing – does that make it more difficult to squash bugs with all these moving parts?
I think it's more just holding the characters back from doing stupid things. So it's a bug, but it's not like a – so there are bugs that like crash bugs where you have to just fix them, whereas this is more of a kind of let's try and make this a bit more realistic. So it's more of a tuning thing. So it's not you can be doing that forever. So it's a question of just getting it to a point where you're happy that it generates realistic stuff most of the time.
Oh, I see. One is like fixing a hole where the other one is like turning a dial to.
Yeah, exactly. So so I need to turn the dial a little bit on some of this stuff, and there are about 200 dials. 200. So you just have to keep doing it.
That's amazing. All right, so it does, and I've been having fun just creating all these crazy ass characters.
Sure,
it's enjoyable just seeing these histories being made. Yeah, you know. I'm enjoying it. Well, now we got a married Starfleet ensign. Let's see if he lasts to 25. Oh, unhappily married. Wait.
Oh, that's not good.
He became a freelance.
That would be your recklessness. You've got to be really careful. Basically, the wisdom and the charisma affect relationships. So if you have a low wisdom, which you do, then you're just not going to spend any time with, you're not going to do life well, if you see what I mean. You're going to make poor choices.
<It's probably laughs>
and one of those things is not invest in relationships.
So, you probably cheated on Heidi, which is sad because Heidi's
Yeah, well, there
nice.
Is cheating as well. That does happen.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But the game models it a little bit. It depends on what's going on. But yeah, you can also assume that stuff's going on behind the scenes too.
Yeah, exactly. So they're now unhappily married, and apparently he got kicked out of Starfleet.
Yeah, looks like it.
Let's see. Oh, now they're just married, and she's an ensign.
Yeah. Fun. So she obviously has gone to Starfleet, and then, and you've taken on a different job, yeah.
Oh, got divorced. Oh,
look at that. That wasn't surprising. Listen to those teachers.
Should have been more sensible, son.
Yeah,
Keith. Why weren't you sensible, Keith? Okay, we're gonna start the game now.
Sure.
So at this point in the game, basically, it looks like all you can do is trade, really.
Yeah, pretty much. So there's a little bit more going on, and you don't have to because this is on Windows. The graphics isn't quite as good as the Mac build, just because I haven't got the graphics card stuff sorted out.
Really?
Yeah. So there's if you're looking at the kind of screenshots for some of the release screenshots, those are on the Mac build, and it's going to look a whole lot better. I've got a whole Bloom system going on as well.
Right now I've landed on Earth, and you have option, like the only option you really have is a market.
Yeah,
there are
right.
people here. Now, eventually you're going to be able to click on the people that are there and talk to them. And
yeah, exactly. So this is exactly what I'm working on right now.
So you'll be able to get like missions from them maybe or
absolutely.
Quests. Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a new gameplay trailer which I'm just about to release today. In fact, which will I haven't got all of the stuff built, but it kind of I've got some mock-ups of the GUI in there to show you, take you through a story of how the game might go and how you might interact with different people.
Ooh,
so yeah, the people here, there's I'm in the middle of you've got a really recent alpha there, and I'm in the middle of just moving the people from shuffling the people around the city around cities at the moment. So there are people on Earth, it's just that you can't see them in the GUI at the moment.
Right, I must, because the game updated itself. That was very nice for the first time I launched it.
Yeah,
it just
so you've actually updated to a build that's not quite as good. But then a newer build's out this week, because obviously you've got a kind of advanced copy there. But new build's out this week should fix that. So you
Ooh,
should be able to
good. See it. I'll do another video of because I want to talk to people. But right now there's a market.
Yeah.
And you have your ship you start with a small ship, and you'll be able to buy other ships, obviously.
That's right. Yeah. At the moment
right
you have about five or six ships that are already built.
Already
in the game. Yeah. So you'll be able to pick from big trading ships to faster, smaller ships without as much weapon slots, that kind of thing.
Right. And right now we're in this Lynx 1, I think that is.
Yeah, that's
And it
right.
looks like just kind of a little fightery thing.
That's exactly right. It's a basic starting ship.
Right. Now, the other day I ran out of fuel. How do I prevent that from happening?
So you can like I said, it's in an alpha, so it's a bit tricky to do that, but if you buy reactor fuel, then you'll be able to refuel when you get to another ship. So at the moment, what you need to do is go and see, and you need to go and click on one of the characters that are in that list, and then start trading equipment. And when you get to that screen, you'll be able to actually refuel your ship. But yeah, obviously, it's not as easy to do as it will be at the moment.
I don't see any other characters.
Yeah, so at the moment, because of the in the build that you're in, you're not going to be able to do that.
I'm just going to run out of fuel regardless.
You are eventually, sorry. Like I said,
no, that's enough. Okay. That's just funny. I had no idea that was happening the other day.
Yeah. So refueling is something you can do on any planet. And I'm toying with the idea of having rescue professions that just go out and rescue ships that have run out of fuel. So that'd be quite fun.
That's a really good idea.
Expensive too.
Oh, it's got to be. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Yeah, they had that in Elite, and then they took it out. So if you were out of fuel, all you can do is blow yourself up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm.
There is a AI consideration around doing that. I think it would be more a gameplay balance issue about getting someone to come and rescue you. But then Elite is multiplayer, and there's obviously a lot of kind of considerations there with that too.
Sure.
You've got to balance the game for everyone at once rather than just in a single player game.
And it makes sense though to have that profession. I mean, you'd think the future is going to have AAA. You know? Do you have AAA in the UK? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like a rescue service that come out. It's called AA actually in the UK.
But
there are other rescue companies are available.
But it's only two A's in the UK, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's so you can buy different things and sell them, and you can make a profit on them. If you buy and sell them straight away, you make a small loss, only a tiny one. So I've rewritten the market code completely recently, so it's actually quite straightforward.
Okay. Yeah, I had to fiddle with it the other day. So basically I can buy a little food. Food is cheaper, but it takes a little more weight than, say, Elysium, but I can't afford Elysium.
Yeah, Elysium is very – for a kind of – that's like a volume an amount. It's not really a ton. It's probably more like a cubic meter or something. Pallets worth of Elysium is quite light. So it doesn't slow your ship down. So the more stuff you have on your ship, the slower your ship will go.
Right.
So you can't go too high. So if you look on the top, you can see that you've only got space for about 3.2 tons of stuff.
Yeah.
It's not really tons, though. It's more volume.
It's a little ship.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're going to go to Venus, and we're going to...
So it's dark at the moment.
Yeah. I know. I don't know why it gets so dark.
So the reason it does is that the idea is that the sun is kind of going round.
That makes sense.
Now, obviously, you know, it doesn't get dark in space, but the shadows change. So the idea is that you can't really see it when you don't have Bloom turned on, and the Windows build doesn't have Bloom turned on, so everything's a bit dark. But basically, all of the lights on the ships have got Bloom on them, so you basically just looks all kind of shimmery, and because the sun is kind of almost behind the screen, and then when it gets to kind of morning, what happens is the sun is in front of the screen, so everything is a bit more lit up. So the idea is that the sun is kind of behind you at this point.
Very nice.
So it gives you a kind of sense of day and night in space. That was the idea, because I really like the Minecraft 10-minute day, 10-minute night cycle. There's just a really nice rhythm in the gameplay about that. And I kind of wanted to try and model that in space. So it's now 10 p.m., so it's obviously dark. And then the sun will slowly rise over the right-hand side of the planet as you go. Great. So you made a profit. Nice one.
I made a tiny bit of money. So we're going to... Oh, God. There's nothing good here to buy.
We're going to go back. Metal, that's a bit cheaper.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Okay.
Yeah, but you won't be able to fit much in. So
I'll be able to fit two, and then that's it. Yeah. So let's go back to Earth and see.
So again, the kind of commodities you get at the moment are really basic. I'm going to probably at least double that list.
Right.
So it's just a bit more interesting.
Now let me ask. There's there are six things. There are a bunch of things on the bottom of the screen. But you have guns, missiles, engines, maneuver. What are all those?
So those are you being able to give power to your different ship components.
Oh.
So the ships are quite carefully modeled. So you have a ship reactor, which you can see on the bottom left of the screen. You can see the reactor going up and down as you fire your engines.
Right.
And you can basically choose, you have a component on there called a regulator, which allows you to choose how much power to divert to different areas. So it's like the idea of power to shields or power to guns that you get in Star Trek. So if you press, for example, the number 3 and then try and fly, then you're giving more power to your engines, basically.
Oh, I see.
And at the moment, the controls aren't quite perfect yet, but you can do Control 3 and also Shift 3, which will... So Control 3, I think, is just turns it off. The red one is redlining it, basically, so that maxes it out. But that also causes heat in the engine, so you might blow out an engine if you do that.
Oh.
It will mean that you'll go much faster if you put more power to those things.
So just hitting 3 puts more power to the engines. Oh, yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
But it will use more fuel. The reactor will burn hotter, and so will the engines themselves.
Oh, we don't want to do that all the time then.
No, exactly. The idea is for a quick burst. It's for a getaway, basically.
Oh, I see.
That's so you can see the sun slowly rising over the right-hand side at the moment.
Oh, yeah. So the right-hand side's getting a little more brightly lit because it's 3 a.m. in game time.
Yeah.
Oh, very clever. And apparently it keeps the same. I'm guessing the time around the solar system is based on.
Yeah, it's static. It's just it's a more kind of a visual touch rather than anything.
No, that makes sense. No, I like it because are you going to have like maybe timed missions where you have to get to a certain place Absolutely. By a certain time? Then yes. It makes sense, and it totally makes sense.
Yeah, it should be stressful seeing the sun come over the horizon, knowing you've got to get there today, otherwise you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. So is this game just in this our solar system?
Yeah, at the moment. So it's in Kickstarter at the moment.
Right.
And there is a stretch goal for kind of introducing, shall we say, outside influences to the game.
Right.
So the idea is that there are aliens in this world, but at the moment humans are completely unaware of them, apart from a very few people. So I'm kind of drawing on the Area 51 conspiracy theories around aliens. But just kind of applying that to the whole solar system. So the idea is that the outer reaches have had alien influences, but it's more that the aliens are smart enough not to kind of be, hey, here we are, and to get shot at, but they're much more kind of subversive in their infiltration. So, it's more about, the aliens are slowly infiltrating various political systems, and how much they will kind of vary on each game. So that's the rough idea. And then there will be obviously more technology that suddenly gets discovered, which is actually alien technology. And the ships will take on a more alien look the further out that you get into the solar system. And then all of the main governments deny that aliens exist. That's the kind of the style I'm going for, assuming I get that far.
And it sounds like there's going to be a lot of replayability just based on the people that populate the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
So different games will have different people that'll offer different missions, and
that's
different
the idea.
People. So, different people in government will react differently to different things.
Absolutely. So the way the organizations work is that you, when you take a job like on a mining placement or as a waiter in a bar, those jobs are real jobs that are generated for those organizations, and each organization is different every game. So the basic governments like the Federation and the New Order, which is kind of the rebelled government on the outer planets, and the Galileo Alliance, which is for the moons of Saturn, they're fixed. Those are generated every game. But the people who take those jobs, so the president is a profession that you can aspire to. In fact, you can become president in character generation if you were lucky enough.
Oh, wow.
I think you need to be 35, like the US president. But I think if you generate an older character, there's a chance you'll get that far. There's obviously only a couple of roles, and they're probably gone. Somebody else has probably taken them. There's no elections as such. You just get the role if you're up to it.
Now, can you eventually move into one of those roles after the game begins? If you work.
Yeah. So I haven't decided about how much of the professional stuff to carry on. Whether, and this is what I'm working on right now, how to make that history really present and available in the world. At the moment, I'm thinking that you will take missions and work your way up into an organization.
Right.
The profession that you're doing currently will affect the way that you interact with the world and with the people. I don't want to constrain the player, though, so I don't necessarily want to have the game. I'm trying to think.
Well,
Yeah, go on.
No, maybe you could do something where, like, the older you get, it's harder to switch careers.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you get. So maybe to have something in game where you become more and more entrenched in an organization, And maybe, who knows, maybe they'll fire you if you do a bad job. And then you're like, what do I do now?
Sure, sure, you know. So it's down to how much guidance I want to give new players, as we were talking about earlier.
Oh, right.
You know, because ultimately, you know, you could set up missions that are just for your profession, and that might obligate you in some way to fulfilling a certain set of missions until you choose to leave your job. You know, so that's an option. But I don't want to constrain the player, but I also want to give the player an opportunity to learn how to play the game, and that may be a good way of doing it. One thing I also want to do is, you know, you won't necessarily get your own ship when you start. It will very much depend on your profession choices. So if you've picked a character who is just a courier, you probably get given a ship to hire, but that doesn't necessarily mean you'll get to keep it. And if you break it, you'll probably be in a lot of trouble.
Right. Oh, I see. So maybe one thing you could do, like start new players, like suggest if you're a new player, set your character's age to 18.
Yeah, exactly. Things like that. And then go and borrow a ship until you have enough money to buy your own.
Or something. Or like
join Starfleet where you'll get given one.
Exactly. Or where you serve on one. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
something like that.
That's the idea. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Now, you mentioned Kickstarter, so let's talk about that for a minute. You've been doing a great job with the updates.
Thanks.
I've been very happy
to
watch.
How much to write, because you don't want to annoy people, but I figure that people want to know about the game, so I've been just saying everything I can about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the beauties of Kickstarter is people want to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm really keen to communicate. I love talking about the game. I love answering questions, so I'm very keen to kind of keep that as up to date as I can.
Let's see, how are you doing? How are you doing so far? I should have had this up. But it looked like you were doing pretty decently last I looked.
So it's kind of slowed down. Oh, it's gone up overnight. That's fantastic.
Oh, you're not far from the halfway mark, and they're going to be a lot of people in the last couple of days when they get that remind me thing. They're just going to be like, you know, that are going to pledge. So it looks like let's see what click track.
We're not quite on target on click track, but you never really know. I mean, to be honest, you know, I'm really keen for the Kickstarter to succeed, because what that will do is it will just accelerate the whole process of getting this game out and released. You know, I don't want to stop working on the game, but it will. So I'm not quite there at the moment.
I see. Yeah.
So, you know, that's fine. I mean, these things go in fits and starts. It's been a huge learning experience going on Kickstarter. It's the first time I've done it.
I was going to ask about that. How's it been going?
Yeah, well, it's a roller coaster. It's like compressing an entire, you know, kind of venture into 30 days. So, you know, when you might do like a startup business and it takes like 18 months or 2 years to kind of get it from market, and then you kind of iterate and you try different things and you have marketing pushes. With Kickstarter, it's like every day. There's, you know, you have to get the word out all the time. So it's quite stressful, but it's a lot of fun. And it's great to finally be talking about something I've been building since 2011. So this game, I started this in November 2011. I've been building types of games, just kind of prototypes and things, for about 10 years. But this is kind of like the one I've got the furthest, if you like. You know, I've been working on it on my own for a long time with just a very small few people knew about it. And so it's great to have to finally have kind of a bigger number of people offering feedback and interested in it. So, you know, it's exciting. It's pretty exhilarating to do Kickstarter, but a bit stressful.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, we've talked to a lot of people who do who are doing Kickstarter campaigns and who have done them successfully and unsuccessfully. And it just sounds like another full-time job for 30 days.
Is. I've had very little time to actually, say, for example, fix those bugs that you're looking at. Just because, you know, there's always somebody else to email and to answer questions for. And I really want to be the kind of developer who answers as many questions as possible. And really, that one of the other reasons of doing Kickstarter is because I want to engage with people and find out what they want to do and how they want to play the game and give them a hand in how this thing works. You know, and if they've got ideas, I want to incorporate those and just be that kind of developer rather than the one who just says, give me your money. You know, and then doesn't quite deliver what's promised, if you know what I mean. That's not what I want to do.
Right. No, totally. And
you're doing well there. You're making a little bit of money.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. I mean, this is what you do in the early parts of games like this, is you just trade or do missions. Yeah. So it makes sense.
So that's worth saying, actually. The missions that you take on you know, at the beginning, no one will trust you, and they will give you low-level missions, you know, rather like in a classic version of Elite. But they right. will, but the way that the organizations are structured is that each organization is actually controlled by other organizations. So, for example, you know, that pizza place down the road actually might have criminal connections, and as you get more trusted by the people in that organization, they will start to introduce you to people, to their controlling organization people. Do you see what I mean?
So
the waiter will introduce you to the manager. The manager will have more interesting missions. He will then introduce you to his rather shady connections down the street, and they will have much more interesting missions. And that's the idea. So you'll be able to build your way up. You know, you build a reputation with individual people rather than reputation being like a static number that just goes up or down. You know, it's not just a metric. It's down to how what relationships you have and what your network looks like. And a lot of the game will be building that network. So in that sense, the influence is quite like in Republic the Revolution, which was a game that I worked on back in 2003, that Elixir Studios released. It's a political simulator set in a kind of fictional Russian
Republic. So yeah, I worked remember on that one.
Yeah, so that was one of the games I worked on when I was back in the AAA world, and I loved those kind of ideas of kind of building a network of people and recruiting people to your cause, and working with individuals rather than just having a reputation. So some of those kind of themes have kind of made it into the way that I want to do missions.
Let's talk about that for a second, because you said you worked on AAA games back in like 2003.
Yeah,
PC games were kind of waning a little bit back then.
That's right, they were. So this is before the kind of big indie revolution.
Yeah,
so,
well before. Yeah,
yeah.
Well before.
So there were indie games out there, and we were playing them, but they were considered like sideshows. You know, we were the developers who were building the games for everyone. That's how it felt. And you know, the only real PC developers were kind of, you know, working for studios, you know, like obviously Lionhead, Bullfrog, mm-hmm. those kind of companies.
Right.
And at that time, companies were either going out of business or being bought by studios. It was a real period of consolidation in the industry. So lots of studios were bought up by, so Bungie were bought at that time, the Halo guys, and, you know, and a number of other smaller studios were kind of bought up by EA or Microsoft or whoever was, you know, trying to think about making console games. So it was all about the consoles at that point and how we're going to do, could we do first person shooters on consoles? You know, so Halo came up around that time, and that was like, oh yes, you can do that. You know, you can, because at the time people were like, oh, you can't without a mouse and keyboard. There's no way you can do a shooter, you know? And then obviously Halo changed all of that. So it made huge waves in the industry. And also games like GTA were just coming out, things like that. So,
yeah.
You know, kind of the franchises that we know well today were kind of being born in that era. It's a really interesting era to be in the industry.
Yeah, I worked at a electronics boutique back in 2003, and it was a very odd time because I was like a PC purist back then.
Right. Yeah, me too, like, actually.
And like, oh, I don't want to touch one of those dirty consoles with their jacks seriously. And their Daxters and their
how times change.
Yeah, I know, right? I bought a PS2 like a year ago because people were like, you have to play all these games.
Sure.
There are all these amazing
great
games
coming out at that point.
You know? I know, right? I'm feeling such an idiot. But it was weird because like back then you had all the, you still had like EB where you'd have like a section for PC games and they came in boxes. It feels so alien now. But like I'm trying to remember who were the indies back then. Like you had your Escape Velocities and things like that. But I guess you had like Matrix games.
Mm.
They were around back then, weren't they? They were,
I
right?
can't remember, if I'm
I
honest.
Think so.
There were a few out there and some companies didn't sell. To the big so what we would describe as indie studios, they existed then, but we didn't call them indie studios. So the idea of what an indie actually is obviously has morphed over the last few years. So you know, there was a time where an indie was just someone like me who's really a solo guy, and then it was anyone who didn't have a publisher and who was publishing on the internet, and then it was okay, it's a couple of people who maybe have a publisher, and now it also an indie is almost anyone who isn't EA or Microsoft or another massive company. So, you know, the industry goes in cycles. And, you know, we went through a big contraction about 10, 12 years ago. And it feels like then there are a whole bunch of little studios that came up, and then they did a game, and then they got bought, and now it feels like we're at the stage where there's lots and lots of tiny indies again, lots of small companies, like, you know, 4-6 person teams building games. But the difference is, I'm not sure they'll get bought this time round. I'm not sure that because they can self-publish. The big game changer is the internet and Steam. Yeah. You know, being able to have a route to market. So the App Store, you know, Steam, all of that stuff just didn't exist. And the only way to get your game out was to get it on a DVD and get it into a shop like EB. You know, that was the only way to do it. And it was really constraining. And now, apart from if you were building shareware, so a very few people were doing shareware.
Oh, God, shareware.
It. Yeah, but that was like the early version, right, of what we're doing right now.
That's true.
You know, so people were doing it, but generally speaking, I don't know if people weren't buying games over the internet, but I guess they were considered to be much more basic or trivial games. And then there wasn't a casual gaming market like there is now.
Well, for me at least, it was like, I remember some of the first digital-only games I bought, like Escape Velocity Nova and stuff. And it felt weird not having the box and not having
the manual. Yeah, exactly. And that was a real barrier for people. Especially on a more serious title that you might pay, I don't know, £20 or whatever, you know, for you. That was quite a lot of money to spend on something that didn't come with a box and a huge manual and, you know, a poster that you could put on your wall. You know, you wanted that in order to do it. So, and games are cheaper now than they used to be. I mean, you used to have to pay £40 for a game, and you still have to pay that for some of the bigger titles. But generally speaking, you could spend your life playing games you can buy for £15 and still be very happy, whereas you couldn't do that in quite the same way before.
And I gotta say, I've heard a lot of indie devs like yourself, or solo devs, or whatever you want to call them, seem to have a similar story where they worked in AAA for a while. They wanted to do their own thing. What was it for you that brought you out of that AAA space? What brought you to do your own thing?
It was a life stage change. Mm. So I was working up in London, up in Camden Town in London, which was great fun, but. My wife and I moved out of London, and we were just about to have a family. And the games just kind of going up to London and working hard on a game every day. I was living about probably 2 hours trip from my office, and it was just we'd made a decision to move out of the city, and I couldn't sustain that job anymore. So I quit the job and went freelance. Actually, whilst working at Elixir, I'd built an internet in Perl and was just kind of getting into web programming. So I thought, hey, I'll try this for a bit. And in the end, I started my own web services company and had about 12 people working for me. That kind of, it was kind of like something that I enjoyed doing. And I got to know a bunch of people in that industry and kind of just left the games industry for a while just because I couldn't see a way of making the games I wanted to make, but I didn't want to go up to London to work. And I didn't want to be beholden to other people's schedules, because games can be very challenging, especially towards release, when you're kind of working on a big team and, you know, you have to work long hours, and it just didn't seem compatible with my life and my family at that point. But then the kind of indie scene kind of exploded, and I always had in the back of my mind that I wanted to get into that. But by then and I saw people like Cliff doing really well. You know, I was like, oh, that's amazing, you know, but I couldn't see a routine because by then I had employees and I was running a business. And then when that kind of came to an end in 2011, for various reasons, we decided to close the business. Within 6 months, I was working on Soul Trader. So, you know, I was freelancing for a while, but I was like, you know what, I just want to build this thing. So I basically have financed the game through contracting after that I closed my business. You know, I contract most of the week, and anytime that I get to work on it, I work on the game. So that's pretty much how my life goes right now.
Right, but Kickstarter will give you the opportunity to work more in the game without worrying about the contracting money coming.
Yeah, so it's really difficult to find the time. And sometimes with games, you do need to sit down and spend like 4 or 5 hours on it just to improve something. Whereas at the moment, it feels like I get an hour to work on it in an evening or whatever. You know, and I have 3 kids and I don't want to neglect them. And you know, my son is always like, can you play Minecraft with me? Can you play Minecraft with me? And I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I need to go and play Minecraft with my son, you know, because that's what he wants to do. So when they're at school, obviously I get much more time. But and last year I spent quite a lot of my time working on the game in the daytime, because I'd kind of saved with contracting. You can kind of put some money aside, and I'd saved enough money to give me a good run at it, and that was hugely beneficial for the game. And and then at that point I kind of realized, you know, this is what I really want to do: work on the game, work on games during the day. So, you know, at Kickstarter, I'd resisted doing a Kickstarter because I felt like I didn't want to kind of just ask for people's money. I didn't really understand Kickstarter. Right. You know, I felt like it wasn't quite the right thing for the game. But after kind of long chats with my mates in the pub, basically they said, you know, why haven't you done one? You know, loads of people really like it. And I'm like, well, you know, and then eventually I was like, right, I'm just going to do this. Because then I saw an opportunity to say, well, if I can get to the point where I can work on this like I have been this year, if I can do that in 2015, then, you know, I'm gonna get it out. I'm gonna get it finished. You know, so then that for me is a hugely big thing. I made all the classic indie mistakes of working on a game that's far too big as your first kind of indie game. so, you know, that's very typical. But I'm not gonna give up. I am gonna finish it. And it just means that I get to finish it this year as opposed to in 2017 or something.
Right. Now, if sadly, let's say the Kickstarter doesn't work out, which I hope it does and I pray it does. But if it doesn't, do you have a plan B? Like, are you going to talk about alpha funding maybe?
Yeah, possibly. You know, I'm exploring other routes at the moment for funding. But again, I don't want to be particularly beholden to anyone, and I really want to keep creative control. Sure. So I want to be a bit careful about that. I mean, what I could do is just go back to saving contracting money and then, you know, doing that cycle again of kind of working through the game. One thing I've just noticed very quickly is that you haven't got any ships flying around in this version. And that's actually a bug with the fact that you... the characters have been shuffled around cities, so they're trying to take off and they're unable to at the moment. So that's what's going on. Just in case you're wondering, if you're watching, where are the ships? You know, that's actually fixed on my machine, so that'll
that's
be out.
That's funny. We be able to talk to other ships as they're flying by. We be able
absolutely
to
yes. So that I'm just putting that in. The kind of discussion between ships is going in right now. At the moment, amazing. They do talk to each other, and you occasionally get little messages saying, "Help! I'm under attack." But it's pretty basic. So
well, that's more than you get
right
an elite,
now.
Though.
So. Right. so at least they'll tell you they're going to kill you before they kill you at this point, which is quite nice.
Oh, how polite.
So they send a little prepare to die message at the moment. And then the communication actually will go back to the kind of main planets. And the idea is that the police will start streaming out pretty soon after, you know, you start an attack. But yeah, back to the Kickstarter. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to stop working on the game. It just means that I'll have my time will be much more limited. But I mean, to be honest, even if the Kickstarter doesn't work, just getting the game out there for people to see it and comment on it has been a big deal. And, you know, having 500 people who want to buy it is a huge motivational boost.
Because
it means that you think, actually, you know, this game could do well and people might actually want to play it, you know, because when you work on your own for so long, you know, you have some days where you think, oh, you know, no one's going to want to play this. Why am I doing this? It's just, you know, but now, you know, obviously I've got a big motivational boost from having the game out there and people playing it, such as yourselves, and giving me feedback. And so I'm not going to stop. It'll just be, I'll just have to, you know, get some more work make sure that I'm funding my family and I'll work on it in my spare time. But it'll take a little bit longer. But I think probably what I'll do is have a rethink and then maybe put another Kickstarter out later in the year.
That has worked for some people. That has worked where, you know, the first Kickstarter didn't do well. The people learned from it. They tried it again and it worked the next time.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not going to be too down about it. I'm just going to see what happens.
Good. That's an excellent attitude, if I may say. Because I feel like some people we've talked to, and I don't want to – I'm not going to say who, but I feel like some people we've talked to, like, put all their eggs in that basket.
Sure, sure.
And then it's like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Oh, I feel so bad for you. But it doesn't
I don't
sound
feel like
–
the game stands on its own because it's almost done, to be honest. There's a there's a huge amount. There's a lot of the gameplay is just kind of slotting in. You know, I've got all of the kind of subsystems are there. The AI system is written. You know, there's there's not much more to do. And I know that the game stands on its own, whether or not people back it on Kickstarter.
Right.
You know, lots of people have said, oh, yeah, yeah, I'll just pick it up when it comes out, you know. So I'm thinking, fair enough, you know, let's make sure it comes out.
Yeah, because there does seem to be some fatigue surrounding Kickstarter a little bit.
That.
Which hopefully won't affect your campaign too much, but that does seem to be, because there have been some failures that haven't helped Kickstarter as a whole.
And I think people have been burned by promises that have been made and not fulfilled, and people and again, it's down to perception. It's very hard to it's really hard as a developer, actually, from the other side of the tracks, when people are asking, oh, can it do this, and you immediately want to say, oh, yes, it can, but you got to be quite careful, because if you don't deliver that, then obviously that's awful, you know. So
that's pretty great, because you got sometimes I look at, like, for example, Star Citizen, I'm like, how are you going to do all that?
Yes, exactly.
I know you have 60 gebbity billion, 11 zillion dollars now.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It really is. But in the way, I was going to ask, is like, because I did not see this resurgence of space gaming coming at all.
No.
It's wonderful. But is that also heartening you to keep moving the game forward, even if the Kickstarter doesn't?
Yes and no. I mean, I think when I started this in 2011, Star Citizen, I don't think it was even out at that point.
No, it wasn't. That's when I started the blog.
Elite hadn't been announced.
Nope.
You know, so I was just like, I'm just building something. Nobody else, you know, there was a few games out there, but no one was building games like this, or at least I didn't think they were. And then suddenly the market's massively crowded, and I'm like, oh, no.
I mean,
this is going to be really good.
Sid Meier's doing one now, for God's sakes.
Oh, man. It's just so unfair. It's just like all these big names coming in, and I'm like, with my little game, hoping that it'll do
well.
No,
you know what? There is totally room. See, that's the thing. I think the audience for these games never went away. They were just were just kind of like, oh, we don't want to sell joysticks anymore. We just want to sell controllers. So we're not going to make things for you right now. And I don't know if you noticed, but since Elite was released, like, there's this one particular Thrustmaster stick and throttle setup that's just been sold out everywhere.
Yes, I've seen that kind of setup on the internet. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it is awesome. I love that idea of basically you've got an arcade in your living room, haven't you? So, you know, it's like an arcade style controller where you just get this massive setup where you're actually flying the ship. You know, it's cool to have some real physical hardware that you kind of interact with in order to play a game. I think that's great. It's like Guitar Hero, but like to the max, you know.
Oh,
it's like, you know, that kind of idea of, like, there was a game, I forget what it was called. It was a mech game years ago, which came with this really expensive. I think so. It came with this massive controller where you could actually, you know, control a mech with like a double twin joysticks and everything.
Yeah, Jim, do you remember that? I think it was Mech Assault for the original Xbox.
No, it wasn't Mech Assault. That was the game that was arcadey stuff.
But yeah, it was like a $200 game. It had the pedals.
That's amazing.
It had the stick and the throttle.
There's a segment of the market that really just appreciates.
Was that Steel Battalion?
Yeah, it was Steel Battalion. I remember that the mechs were called Vertical Tanks, but I couldn't remember the name of the thing. So I was like, Vertical Tank Xbox. Dear Google.
Wait. Vertical Tanks.
Yes. As opposed to the traditional horizontal tank.
Oh my God, that's
great.
Or the hate tank, which is the opposite of the love boat.
Oh.
So, it's an old MOD song. So,
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So in some ways, it's like, oh, all these space games are out. But in other ways, obviously, it makes you think, oh, well, there is a market. So, you know, someone's going
to
play it.
There's totally a market. I mean, people come to me left and right asking me which games they should buy, which games they should wait for. You know, and it's great to be able to give them options. And people want options.
Sure.
And people love these top-down 2D space games because they don't have to worry about a Z-axis. And they can focus on the flying and pew-pewing stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So
I did want to create a game that was inaccessible. So I think a lot of space – when you just think about writing a space game and you think about doing one in 3D, you think, oh, I'll just put a few planets around the world. You know, that one's – you know, miles away over there, you know, you've got a tiny ship, and then you fly around and you think, actually, there's not much here, and to actually create a game, it's quite hard. That's why you see, you know, when they showed videos of Elite Dangerous, they put a ton of asteroids everywhere just because actually space isn't that interesting. So you need to be, you know, you need to make sure you fill it with stuff. Otherwise, it's kind of dull to, it's kind of dull to explore. So top down is good because it constrains you to one axis or to two axes. So you, so it's actually easier to fill the space with interesting things to do, because you know it's reasonably easy to, you know, you've got a smaller amount of space basically.
Right, and even games that fudge it, like Freelancer, which is a 3D game but is really only a 2D game.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah.
Even they fudge it a bit, but they still fill the universe. They make it very active, which is awesome.
It puts me in mind a little bit of Drifter, because Drifter's also on a 2D plane, yet a 3D engine. So you know, it's in.
So I didn't back Drifter, and I haven't seen it for a while. I'm not sure how it's doing, but
It's doing good. It's doing good. Great. I played it a few months ago, and it is coming along nicely. That one,
yeah,
cool.
So, question about this though. So it's keyboard controls right now. Are you going to support gamepad? Because it seems like a game that would do really well with gamepad.
Yeah, I think so. I've always tried to constrain the controls. I've been quite careful not to introduce new ones. To a kind of reduced set, just so that it doesn't require a full keyboard to play. Mm. So my thinking was maybe doing some kind of mobile version in the future. So I didn't want to kind of I wanted to make sure you could play it with a touch interface, if at all possible.
Oh.
So that was my thinking. Having said that, you know, I didn't even really know that gamepad gaming on PC was a thing anymore. But clearly it is, and people love doing it, because obviously now you have Xbox controllers. I've never plugged an Xbox controller into my PC, so it's not something that I've ever done. So
You know what? I was in the same boat as you. I'm like, why do I need a controller? And then I got Euro Truck Simulator 2.
Right, exactly.
And everyone told me to get a controller for it, and I got a controller, and now, like, if a game doesn't support it, I'm like, what the hell?
yeah. So now I've realized that's a thing. I'm like, oh well, why not? You know, there's no reason not to.
This would work well on the gamepad, like Drox Operative, the game you mentioned earlier. That's all I play it with now is a gamepad.
Right. So I should be very careful to say, because I don't want to promise the earth and not deliver. I really hope to support gamepad.
that's a very good answer.
It'll definitely happen, you know. But yeah, I hope that I'll be able to support gamepad, because if it makes the game better, then I'll want to support that. But again, it'll come down to, you know, can I fit all this stuff in?
Right. And I guess one final thing: are you on Greenlight? I forget. Are you on Greenlight right now?
I am on Greenlight. The problem that I have at the moment is that I've been on Greenlight for like since it came out. So I stuck a really early build of the game. Greenlight. I got stacks of votes, and then everyone's like, "This is too early. This sucks," you know. And I'm like, "Oh no." So you know what it can be like sometimes putting your stuff out on the internet. People criticize it, and I think I realized that I'd put the green light up too early, and it was a mistake. So I took it down for like 2 years, and I just recently put it up again. But but at the moment it's got like 3,000 votes.
Nice.
So it's like it's quite close to the top 100, but it's just not. There's no kind of big bang launch for it, so it was difficult to
give it time.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know whether or not to delete it and redo a new one, but I feel like I've got like, 30,000 people have seen this green light, so you know that's a good thing, right?
Oh, very good thing.
People,
yeah.
Maybe people judged it on the build 2 years ago unnecessarily. No, so it's just tricky to know. But yeah, it's definitely up there. It's linked to from the Kickstarter.
Okay.
If people want to vote for it, go ahead and vote for it, and hopefully it'll get out on Steam.
No, I hope so too, because I mean that's kind of the golden arrow. Right, is getting on Steam.
And to be honest, you know, I figured that if it does well and there's enough traction now, I know that enough people want to play this game now. And that's kind of been the big validation for me for Kickstarter.
Oh yeah.
You know, there are people out there who want to play it. So Rock Paper Shotgun doing an article, you know, being very complimentary about it was just like, okay, yeah, people will play this game, people will cover it, people will buy it, and ultimately that's what Steam wants. So I guess that it'll get on if there's enough people out there. Then they'll put it up there. So I'm not too worried about it.
No, I mean, it took forever for it. Again, I'll bring up Drox Operative. It took forever for Drox Operative to get on there.
Right.
But it did eventually, thank God.
Yeah, exactly. So I figured if people want it, then they'll put it up there. But yeah, if you know, obviously getting the game noticed is the main challenge. Because when people see it and they tend to like it, and I've got, you know, I can see that, you know, in terms of the number of video plays I've had, you know, and versus the number of people who've backed the game, you know, that's really high, which tells me that if people see the video, if people see the Kickstarter, they want it. But it's just a question of making sure they see it. That's the trick.
Yeah, that is, I'm noticing, the biggest issue, the biggest hurdle with gaming now is discoverability.
Yes, I mean, so true.
Steam's last massive update was pretty much all about that, is trying to make games easier to discover. It's not the best yet, but kudos to them for trying.
And I think that there's a lot out there because of the kind of indie game explosion. There's a huge number of games, and that's a really good thing. It's a great thing for players. It's a great thing for the kind of the industry, because it allows us to kind of, you know, there's always a game that's doing something similar to what you want to do, to kind of that you want to play and kind of get influences from, and you know, then that's great. But yeah, it's hard. It's not as bad as it is in mobile gaming. But
even imagine trying to get noticed in the iTunes store.
It's crazy. But yeah, I think it's my main attitude is to build something really great and email people about it, and hopefully it'll get picked up. That's basically, you know, I'm being really intentional about talking about it and blogging and doing marketing and putting out week notes when I can and that kind of thing. So I am being intentional about marketing, but ultimately I want to build a great game, and then, you know, and then hopefully people will come by and check it out.
That's all we can really ask for. And that sounds like a perfect place to wrap it up too, because we've been talking, over an hour. It's late here. Sure. It's early there. So you have 10 days left in the Kickstarter. So folks, this game is pretty fascinating. I've not really played a game besides 1978's Space on the Apple II that has this kind of character generation. So it's kind of fascinating just for that. And that's just part of the game. So that's just like one piece of the puzzle. So folks, it's called Soul Trader. It's currently on Kickstarter right now. Probably by the time you hear the audio of this, it'll have about a little more than a week left. So there'll be a link in the post and everything. It's definitely on Kickstarter. Soul, S-O-L. I know I keep saying it like it's Soul, S-O-U-L, but no, it's not. It's not that. It's like the Soul System, S-O-L Trader, and it's got a lot of potential, and I really like it, and you should back it. That's what I'm gonna say.
Thanks.
Absolutely. So, Chris, thank you so much for getting up at the ass end of the morning in your neck of the woods for it's like 5 something now, right?
Yeah, 5:15 a.m.
Oh, Jesus Christ! that's what I'm getting up tomorrow morning, my time. But yeah, I want to thank you for being so flexible and being willing to get up at this insane hour to talk to us about your pretty cool role-playing massive thing you're building. This is a massive like endeavor, and it shows just in excuse me, just in creating the character alone. It shows how much just number building is going on with all these characters. So I can't wait to see the next build where I actually see other characters and see ships flying around and stuff. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us, folks. Again,
you're so welcome.
Go to Kickstarter. It is Soul, S-O-L, Trader.com. It has, as I'm saying this, 10 days left, and it could use a push. It could use a little push in the right direction. So I definitely endorse this. Throw Chris a few dollars or pounds or whatever. It's using dollars, right?
It's pounds, actually.
Oh, yeah. It is pounds. Yeah, right now. So how many?
So you can pick up a copy of it for £10. So that's like $15.
That's indie pricing, right there.
Yeah,
that's totally indie pricing. $15. So I totally backed it, by the way, because I need to play this. But yeah, folks, thank you so much for listening. And as always, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic you would like us to cover, hit us up at hail@ spacegamejunkie.com. Thank you, Jim, and thank you, Chris, for joining me. And have a great night, everyone. Good night.